Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation, recorded live during the May 2022 Youth Education Conference held in Morristown, Tennessee.
So this is the challenge only the youth today can solve. Heroes, dogs, and changing the world. Anybody like dogs? Oh, that's good. So who are some of your heroes? Just shoot off. Who are you? Yeah. All right. I like that one. Kelly. Washington.
Julie Andrews.
Nice. Okay. Others?
My great-grandpa. Expert
family one. Excellent. Joan of Arc, that's
Joe
another
March.
Good one.
Joe March.
Oh, Joe March. Oh, Joe March is awesome. Joan of Arc's pretty good, too. Yeah. So I gave us a pretty good list earlier. We could just go off list.
My grandpa's brother.
Your grandpa's brother. Okay, that's cool. Well, all right. I like those family stories. Those are powerful ones. What about freedom? That kind of ties in a little bit. Who has some heroes that have done something great for freedom? Does anybody here care about freedom, like freedom? Are we talking? Okay, so we don't have to. I don't have to backtrack a little bit more. And so who wanted to share a few hero or freedom hero? Go ahead, Boyack. All right, that's a good one. Yeah, Marcus Luttrell. That's a fantastic one. Crazy story. Yeah, right up here. All right, Grant. Awesome. Washington's another great one for that one. Yeah, empty shirt. Harriet Tubman. Ooh, fantastic. Malala, okay. I like that. Yeah, that's a pretty solid freedom list right there, right? So heroes it's an interesting title, right? It's an interesting subject. What is a hero? What makes a hero? I've been going all over the place with this talk. Actually, all my talks this weekend. I don't really have, really hard to get a right structure. I have a lot of great ideas, but how do you get the right structure that it clicks and makes sense, right? Which is one great thing I have several students here that we teach online. It's great to do book discussions because you don't really have to have a structure. You just have notes in a book and say, let's go somewhere random, and then you just go wherever you go, right? But in a talk, it's supposed to be kind of organized, so it makes more sense. So we'll see how this goes. I was going to bed and then had to roll out and was up until like midnight, finally with this spark of inspiration of this flow. So let's just jump right into it. Let's go into a fable. Anybody here read Animal Farm? A book called Animal Farm. So a lot of people are pretty familiar with it. So those who aren't very familiar with it, it's a fun little story. It's a fable about animals on a farm. Huh, how about that? And these animals get this bright idea, the pig specifically instigated, that the farmers, how they treat us, the way we have to work hard all the time, and the farmer's just going to sit in the house and reap the benefits of our labor, right? So the pigs say, get all the animals together at the barn at night, under the cover of dark, and they say, I think we should overthrow these farmers. I think we should change how this works. I don't think we should have to work for them. I think they should have to work for us. Or better yet, let's just get rid of them and we can work for ourselves. And the animal said, that sounds great, but how do we do that? So the story progresses, and they talk about this great ideology, this great process of overthrowing the humans and taking the farm over for themselves. So there's several different animals. I'm going to go through a list of a couple of them. I'm going to give you the symbolism, the meanings behind a bunch of these animals. So you have the pigs, who are the wise leaders. So the pigs. We have the pigs who want to have the power. They're the leaders. They're the idea generators, right? So we have Snowball. Snowball's this special pig. He's a really, I actually really like Snowball. And most people that he's symbolizing, I respect snowballs. Because they hit you in the face and you have to respect them. Like, they hurt. So he believes in this. He doesn't believe in oppression. He believes in community. That's what Snowball believes in. That's what he's after. And that's what he's preaching. Then you have Squealer. Squealer the pig. He represents a lot of the media, a lot of the elites, a lot of academia, the intellectual elites. Then you have Napoleon. And he represents what his name represents, where it comes from. Napoleon from the Napoleonic Wars. He represents ambition and power, or greed. And then you have Old Major. He's the instigator of this whole process. He's like he's the grand philosopher. He understands all these ideas and how everything works. He understands the power structures. And he lays the foundation for this whole shift to happen, right? And then he dies early on in his old age, and he dies and is hoping that that these animals will gain their freedom, right? Now we have Boxer. Boxer is a big, big horse. What's he like a Clydesdale or something like that? I can't remember exactly, but he's a big old horse. He's the workhorse of the farm. If there's a task that needs to be done, he puts his shoulder to the wheel and he gets it done. He won't stop until it's either done or he's passed out. This guy knows how to work, and he's willing, especially he's willing for his friends and his comrades to pull the weight to help them. Then we have Clover. Clover realizes that the pigs, especially Napoleon, Clover recognizes she's a horse, a smaller horse, a nice horse, doesn't want to ruffle any feathers, doesn't want to rock the boat. But she realizes that there's lies. Clover doesn't want to be mean or cause anything to be uneasy, so she just kind of bites her tongue a little bit and says, well, I recognize that this isn't exactly true, what Napoleon, these guys are saying, but I mean, it's, what is little old me going to do about it, right? I'm a nobody, so I'm just going to be quiet and we'll be okay, hopefully. Moses recognizes the evils that Napoleon's pushing for, and that it needs to be abolished. And again, with these, I'm not going to give you the whole story. Go read the book. There's even a YouTube video, I think, they do like a YouTube story of it. There's a quick synopsis of it. Then you have Benjamin. Benjamin's the donkey. And as donkeys are, exactly. He gets what's happening, and he likes to whine and complain. And so he actually makes things worse instead of helping things. But he sees exactly what's happening. He understands exactly what's happening. And he can point it out, he can put his finger on it, he can explain it to others, but he whines, he complains, he's bitter all the time, and so everybody turns their back on him. Which is interesting. That's a very key piece that we're going to talk about here. Don't be a Benjamin. Don't be a donkey. Then the one of the last main animals we're going to talk a lot about here today is dogs. There aren't any cats in this story, sorry guys, for the cat lovers. The cats are just kind of free. They do what they want. So the dogs represent something really interesting. Because they're largely puppies through most of the story. So the puppies, these dogs represent the new generation, the rising youth. They don't represent you, but they could. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. So the animals overthrow the humans, and they gain the power, and then they work and provide for each other. And then the pigs end up turning into humans at the end. The animals look through the windows of the house, and they say, we can't really tell which ones are the humans and which ones are the pigs because they look so much alike. Which is really funny because Churchill has a wonderful quote. This is not in my notes, but I love it. Churchill has his favorite animal. I love it. So Winston Churchill. He says, I don't like cats. Because cats, they look down on us. They think they're superior over everything, right? They're just a little bit cynical. They look down on us. Dogs, I don't really like dogs. Because they think they're inferior and they look up to us. And they're just, you know, happy wagging the tail. And so they just submit to everything. But pigs, I love pigs. Because pigs treat us as equals. So that's the basic gist of the story. There's a little bit more we're going to dig into on the symbolism part. I'm not going to give too much more of the story itself of how the process plays out. But in the end, the animals are looking again into the house, and they can't tell the difference between the pigs and the humans, and they don't have any food to eat. There's three phases that happen in this book. And George Orwell is writing a this fable about history. You can go through the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia, early 1900s. You can go through the Marxian-led revolutions. Well, wasn't really Marx. He was more the old general major. Sorry, not old general, old major philosopher. He didn't really do a lot. But because of him, the ripple effects of the revolutions in France, revolutions in Germany, revolutions in communist Maoist China, all went through these three stages. So that's what Orwell's writing about. He's giving a history, but with animals, and it's a lot of fun. So these dogs, we're going to talk about these dogs. Just be thinking about the dogs. I'm going to be talking about the dogs this entire time, but I'm not going to say it very often. So there's these three main phases. Yeah, there's these three main phases that we go through. But I want to really hit on these three main phases that this book covers. So at the very beginning, the pigs are saying, old Major and Snowball, they're all saying that in this new system, as a community, we're going to come together, and we're going to all eat equally. All are equal. That sounds pretty good, right? All eat equally, all are equal. That's phase one. That's what we're aiming for. Phase two turns into, as you see how Napoleon progresses and runs the farm, after old Major dies and they chase Snowball off the farm, so he can't meddle with their continued plans and ambitions. Phase two turns into, if you don't work, you don't eat. It's actually not communism yet. Not quite yet. Phase three. If you don't obey, you don't eat. And that's where you transition to communism. So phase one, historically speaking, Lenin in his... Oh dear, what's the title of the book? It's gone now. But Lenin talks about the process, the strategy of how to accomplish this communal approach. And he says, in free governments, we can't jump into, if you don't work, you don't eat. It won't work. People like their freedom too much, it turns out. So you have to start with, all eat equally, all are equal. So with free governments, that's our approach. With governments that aren't free, you can just use military force and enforce phase two. And just start right there. You saw that with China, Mao. And you're seeing that in Hong Kong literally today. And about a year ago when President China decided that Hong Kong was no longer going to be an independent city, it's not going to be a satellite anymore, they moved in with the military, and they are militarily and forcefully locking people into their homes. And then phase three is, if you don't obey, you don't eat. So it's an interesting book. It's a lot of fun. So right there, somebody said that's communism, and I said, oh, it's not quite yet. Phase three is communism. So phase two is socialism. Yeah, some people are mouthing it right there. Phase two is socialism. And you see, it's a complicated thing, because we tend to put things under an umbrella and just put this big label on it and then throw tomatoes in it if you don't like it, right? So the farm animals were being oppressed. Let me just put on the record, that's wrong. Right? Anybody agree, disagree with that? I'm seeing lots of nodding heads. I said two things that are opposite from each other. You guys agree with that? Oppression's bad. Whatever form it comes in, oppression's bad, right? So let's take a quick detour here. The French Revolution is a perfect example of this, right? Because we always compare French Revolution, American Revolution, French Revolution bad, American Revolution good, right? That's the umbrella that we get. So we don't recognize the full picture of what's really happening in the French Revolution. The French Revolution is a bunch of people who are like the animals, who are seriously, extremely oppressed. France was in a really tough pickle. They were in a tight spot. The people were at the breaking point. They said, enough is enough. You can't ride your carriages through town, run over our children, toss me a coin, and pretend like that's okay. It was bad. It was wrong. Actually, most of Europe was going through the shifting period of going from a feudal aristocratic system to a more democratic aristocratic system. Going from oppression and different degrees and forms of slavery, going into freedom is a hard shift. It is extremely difficult. Later today, I'm giving a talk on the Old Testament, where I'm going to be talking about the phases of history and how it's actually a positive thing. So for you guys, I'm going to give just a little bit of a trailer, a teaser preview, I don't know, a sneak peek, that's what I'm looking for, thank you. A little sneak peek into one of the things I'm going to talk about. I don't have a whiteboard, but imagine this is a graph, right? You have X, Y, no, other way around, Y and X, and your freedom, the progression of freedom, if you go from the very beginning of the history of the world to now, it looks like this. Does that make sense? It's a continual, gradual increase. Now you zoom in on any decade or century or millennia, and it goes like this, and sometimes way down here, and then a little bit up here, way down the right, and it goes crazy. But if you take the whole history of the world, its progression is always going up. Does that make sense? So with that, Mao was not a hero by any stretch of the meaning, the word. Robespierre and the French Revolution wasn't a hero in my book. However, they ended up being pretty effective freedom fighters. Now, hear me out. You take before the French Revolution, and you take Mao's China before the Communist Revolution. And it was the elites who owned the peasants. It was just a few handful of people who owned the peasants. They could run over them with carriages and toss a coin, and it was fine. That was normal. If you didn't work, you didn't eat. If you didn't obey, you didn't eat. Whatever the elite said, whatever the aristocrats said, that's what you had to do, or they owned you. Right? So now, the French Revolution, Mao's China, the people, the masses, came to this breaking point and says, this is not okay and we are done. And so they broke the system. The French Revolution literally massacred, committed genocide on an entire class of people. Same thing happened in the Maoist Revolution. Bolshevik Revolution, very similar. See, socialism and communism doesn't come because there's an ambitious person. It comes because there's a problem of oppression. Now, because of the French Revolution that happened, that went over for about 80 years of just different groups murdering and destroying other groups, and the Maoist Revolution, where it wasn't different groups trying to vie for power, but there was an ambitious Napoleon, who was able to gain enough popularity to direct enough hate and anger towards the groups that he wanted to, and literally just kill thousands of people, and then when he had power, to murder millions, literally millions of people who didn't obey him or who didn't like him. So we have these revolutions that needed to happen, a change needed to happen. And the aristocrats weren't going to just sit back and say, oh, you know, what we've been doing for the last 1,000 years really isn't, well, in China, it's a few 1,000 years, it really isn't a good approach. I think we should give up our power, our wealth, our money, our relaxed, easy lives, and give it back to the people and help them be free. And that we can all be equal before natural law. I'm trying to think of a time in history when that's happened. There have been times when people have shifted and repented. We have Nineveh. There are several different individuals who have shifted. But history, when you have people who own that, have that corner on power, don't really like to give it up, right? Would you guys agree with that? They don't like to give up their power. Yes, see, it's a tricky situation. Wherever history is very complex, and it's not exactly a civil war that you bring out. It's not an aristocracy like in France or China that we're talking about, going from a feudal system or a form of a shift, and they just give the power away because it was going through a bloody war to free those who were being oppressed. They didn't just give the power up. So a shift needed to happen. And people were ready to make a shift. And people came along and said, we will all be equal and we will all actually be able to eat. And the masses who were starving, who were stomped on, who were spit on, who were used and abused, literally in every sense of those words, they said, thank you. Because it's really hard to think about this. American Revolution, good. French Revolution, bad, right? So why do we say that? Why is one good and one bad? Because in a general sense, yes, I agree. That's a great way to compare them, because one turned into a bloody revolution for 80 years, and one turned into a revolution that happened for a few years, and then they turned around and said, hey, let's be buddies, let's trade, let's be friends again. There's very different outcomes. Very rarely in history have a war ever turned into something good like the American Revolution. Very rare. That war approach should be avoided at all costs. It is the last solution. Especially as part of the LDSHE, it should be the God-directed solution, because taking life is nothing. It's not a good thing. When we talk about the things that we care about, and I'd be willing to give my life for it, absolutely, but it should... That's a big thing. And those who do put themselves, talk about Washington and Luttrell, those who do put themselves on that line, that's a big deal. Whether we agree with them or disagree with them, that's a big deal. So the French Revolution, why did it not exactly pan out? Why do we not consider it a good revolution? Because on the graph, it actually is good. It broke an old system that was very damaging. And it laid the groundwork for 80 years later, very painful process, to actually produce a very free and democratic nation. It is one of the least aristocratic today. Why? Most of the other nations kept their aristocracies. France didn't have an aristocracy after the French Revolution. Is that a good thing? No. Genocide is never a good thing. It's never okay. Thing is, it did happen. And take that as a parallel in your own life. God will root out the evil. He will have us a great people. And so, do you want to do it the American Revolution way? With a little pain and struggle? Or do you want to take 8, 10, 20, 30, 40 years of your life of harrowing struggle until you get there? Because he will get you there. Just depends on how you want to go about it. He's very dedicated in our greatness. In us being a hero. So American Revolution, their foundation came from the masses having an education. The French Revolution came from a foundation of the masses not having an education. And it gets even more complex than that, because guess what? The masses, it wasn't their fault. They couldn't get an education. The ruling elite didn't allow it. You were starved to death or killed if you tried to get it. And so when you have that level of oppression, you have what's called an exodus. You have the Moses, somebody that comes through and says, all right, we're going to wander in the wilderness until... we learn the principles. That's hard. That's tough. And God is very dedicated in making sure that line continues to grow and progress. No matter what Napoleon, what pig, what tyrant tries to say otherwise. Now he can try to, as hard as he can, to destroy and to gain power. And it doesn't work. It is extremely bad and painful for a little while. And again, for God, sometimes a little while can mean not in our timetable. I think that the reign of destruction was far too long. But God has his plan, and he understands how to produce freedom. That if we're not quite ready for it yet, he'll let us make our choices and go through the struggle. Because at the end of it, guess what's happened in this world? going from an era where we can conquest and then have slavery and you just kind of do whatever you want, wherever you want, if you have, you know, a bigger sword. Or if you have more money, you can buy a bigger sword and that sword will still follow you. Where we are today is really quite exciting. And we're in a very special place because we have more people on this earth, more youth, more gods, all over this planet that know more, understand more, and have experienced more freedom than ever before. See, Mal thought he was sneaky and was getting power. Robespierre thought he was sneaky getting power. God said, that is sad. The destruction and pain you've caused. But from the ashes I will grow new plants. And the example that Americans set, and then the emerging free world, the United Kingdom. See, the United Kingdom is a really fun one. I better not go on that tangent. Because they've actually done one of the most peaceful shifts from oppression to freedom that I've been able to see anywhere in the history of the world. They've just, over a few thousand years, they've shifted and developed. The aristocrats literally have stepped back. It hasn't been fast. It's taken a long time, but they literally just stepped back and they've become more and more powerful. Without major catastrophic war. There's definitely been bloodshed. War of the Roses was a very pretty era, but they're one of the few who have actually stepped back and given power away. And done it more or less politically. Again, with a few words, like our Civil War and a few things we've been through. So, the Dawds, this is the question. Because the battle for the future isn't fought in D.C. It's not fought in London. It's not fought in any capital anywhere in the world. It's not fought in the legislature. The battle for the future of a country, of a society, of people, a culture, the battle for the future is fought in the minds of the youth. That has always been true. How you educate the youth, the culture that you guys accept and buy into and create, that produces the culture 10, 20 years from now. And so Napoleon, what he did, the first thing he did as soon as he got power on this farm, is he called the dogs in, and he called all their puppies in, and they disappeared. At least the puppies did. The dogs were still old and free, and he couldn't exactly control them. So they went about their day. He gave them special jobs and special privileges, and then he kept the puppies. And it's a really interesting thing as you read the story, because he says he called in the puppies, and then you don't ever see or hear about puppies again until the very end of the book. The dogs. So you get Hitler's youth. The red children, the mouse youth. This is a very interesting thing. The battle for the future. And Lenin understood that. Trotsky understood that. Karl Marx understood that. They write about that. They say, you have to get into schools. You have to get into curriculum. You have to get into homes. You have to get into youth culture. Otherwise, it's all over. Because then they grow up with these family values, with these freedom values, with these all are equal before natural law values, and they hold on to those and they keep those, and then we have to do this whole war all over again to gain or to maintain power. You have to do it again and again every new generation. But what if we just got the generation before they even came up, and then once they leave home, they became our biggest supporters? You guys, sadly, I apologize, are the battlefield. Think about that for a second. You guys want to grow up and be heroes, change the world. Guess what? You are the world. In 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, 70, 30 years. Starting young, good job. Good to be here, guys. I hope you recognize that. You are the battlefield. Now, there's definitely things you need to do and go out and accomplish. Right now in 10, 20, 30 some odd years, right? But I hope you recognize, and parents, I hope you recognize, our children, our homes, that is the battlefield. If we don't have a structure of freedom, if we don't have a structure of principles, of morals, of virtue, of argument, of discussion in our homes, of respect, of kindness, of strength in our homes, in our minds, then we lose. Youth, you guys are the battlefield. What you choose to do today and tomorrow determines whether or not you'll be a lone survivor. Determines whether or not you'll be an Abigail Adams, a George Washington, a Joan of Arc, a Harriet Tubman. One of my big heroes is Frederick Douglass. He changed my life multiple times. I hope you recognize you guys are these founding fathers and mothers. You guys are these world changers. We read about them in history and say, oh, that's so cool. There's a lot of heroes. We had several people mention families and some names that a lot of people won't know. There's a lot of obscure heroes. And so the question for us today is, are we dogs or are we heroes? Because Animal Farm, the book, doesn't have any heroes in it. Because guess what? What happened? Who's read the Reckoner series by Brandon Sanderson? Quite a few. Or had some other great fantasy or sci-fi. What's another really fun book series like that? Stormlight. Okay. Sanderson. No, what's not Sanderson? Give me one that's not. Lord of the Rings is fantastic. Fable. That's fun. Okay. So there's a lot out there that talk about heroes, right? Because what happens when you have heroes in the story? I'm serious. What happens? I love that. That's very true. When you have heroes around you, you become a hero yourself. You have fixers. You have hope. You win. So George Orwell, he wrote a story specifically without heroes because he wanted to show the fucks that has happened many times in history when this certain ideology is followed. That this is the phases, this is the process, this is how it happens. This is how we end up in oppression. And that is the core truth that I'm getting at. Adeline hit on it. Soraya hit on it beautifully. With the noticer, especially. Oh, little old me. If I'm not a George Washington and everybody from here to Timbuktu knows my name and what I've done, then I'm not a hero. Baloney. That is the biggest lie that oppressors will tell you. What you individually do makes all the difference in the battle. And I mean that absolutely. And I'm using those terms specifically. What you do makes all the difference. And when we do it together, we ain't got no gaps. Guys, it's just a little bit. You're not the only one. Look around you. You're not the only one. And there's groups like this, literally all over the world. I've spoken at them all over the world. Online. Unfortunately, I don't get to travel all over the world yet. You're not the only one. When you go home, strengthen your stakes and expand your tent. You're the salt of the earth. That was so spot on. We're not called to huddle up and hide in a tent and let everybody else burn. No. No, thank you, Ayn Rand. That's not what I expect you. We are called to serve, to love, to connect with those we disagree with, and to propose a different option, and to learn how to influence and to lead. Not to bash, not to destroy, but to see the good in every individual you come across. And to recognize that fine print, to see these phases. So there's 21 points that I may or may not go through. So that's why you can get on and download these and read them for yourself. I'm probably going to skim through a couple of them at least. So you just get a feel of what these phases, what they're going through, what they're doing. Let's jump to that. You know, I have to do a few points, and we'll finish on that. Because you guys can turn this off, you can read this. There's several other things I want to talk about, the forms, kind of the structure of Republican form of government, forms of democratic government, forms of socialist government, forms of communist government, and to be able to just kind of analyze those and understand what does it look like, what are the differences, what's the basic definition of each of those. You guys have dictionaries, right? You have Google. You can get really basic definitions of all of those pretty easily, pretty quickly, and they make a lot of sense. They're really good. And then with this for now, I have, again, some of those key pieces in there for you already. So I'm not going to go over that. You guys can figure that out. You're smart kids who are heroes, right? The right answer to that is, yeah. No question, no thought, yes. I'm a hero. Guys, I'm serious, you guys are heroes. Maybe I shouldn't go over this yet. Maybe we should talk about that a little bit more. Because that is very real, and I really believe that. You guys are cool. Point one. This is phase one. I'm just going to cruise through this really quick. The world isn't fair. We should all be equal. Join with us. Let us take away the extra stuff and distribute it equally. Property is the main thing that makes us unequal. Property is evil. It's bad. Look at all the inequality. Let's abolish everything that supports property, especially ownership, religions, family, etc. Doing 1.5, which is, let's abolish property, will end family force against children, religious force, racism against minorities, and rich force against everyone else. All of this is the only answer. The world will be so much better. Please join us. We can do this. Phase two. Government will start taking care of everyone. They will feed, clothe, educate, provide health care, etc. In order to do this, we need to divide everyone into two groups. Government officials, everyone else. Government officials will make sure everyone is taken care of. Government officials will give everyone a job to make sure everyone has enough food, clothing, housing, education, health care, etc. Up to this point, socialists are mainly working to deliver on their promises made in phase one, taking from the rich and giving to the poor. And then we phase go on. Once you get into phase three, about 3.1, 3.2, that's where you shift into communism. Now, it's not very often, actually, that you get into phase three. That is more on the semi-rare spectrum. But when you're going through these, if you have momentum going into phase two, it will go into phase three. That's just going to happen. And if you accept and do phase one, phase two inevitably follows. See, Snowball didn't believe in phase two, where you end religion, you end family, you do abolish property, but you're not doing most of these controlled projects that they're talking about in phase two. Snowball believed in phase one. Napoleon says, that's great, let's kill him, let's get rid of him, he's gone now. Guess what? I have a whole army for me to implement phase two. And then there will be a Stalin who follows Lenin and pulls a lot of strings and kills a lot of people and then takes power and says, now let's do phase three. That's awesome. And that's what's happened again and again and again and again when you do phase one. If you don't do phase one, you cannot have a phase two. Does that make sense? Go get this, read through this, break it down in each point of how this process happens. What I just did was read you Animal Farm in bullet point form. Okay? So what do we do? Who are we as heroes? Nope, that's the wrong one. There's three things I'm going to give you. There's three challenges I'm going to extend to you. We've had a quick overview of some history, dug into a little bit of a story. It's a pretty fun story. It does really well conveying the examples. The first one, I challenge you to discover your mission. Discover what it was that God created you to do. Like Rebecca said, I was in my early 20s when I finally recognized what mine was. Wandering down a deserted street, middle of the afternoon, nobody was home. And I literally remember, I can see the whole picture. I remember stopping right in the middle of the road, looking up and saying, ha, this is what I want to do with that. Okay. That moment has defined the rest of my life. And actually previously to it, because everything I've been doing led me to finally being open and recognizing what God was trying to get me to recognize. I challenge you to seek and discover what you were created for. Challenge number two. I just challenge you to live that mission. Once you know what it is, dedicate your whole heart and soul to accomplishing that. And don't do somebody else's mission. You might be an artist, a musician, might go into the military as part of your mission. And if you're sitting there doing your mission, saying, man, look at the difference I'm making, what are they doing playing over there? Why are they drawing when they should be reading the Federalist Papers and teaching from it? Don't mission shame. That doesn't turn you into a hero. Trust other people's journeys and process, because guess what? The only thing that made the American Revolution good, the thing that takes you and turns them into heroes, the thing is living your mission. That really, I mean, it's as simple as that. It really is as simple as that. Which isn't very simple, albeit. But that is the only thing that's ever worked. And for you, if it's to play the violin, awesome. Live your mission, do that, because that will build the world. If it's to get a great freedom education, which, if you want to be a free people, you have to have a base level of freedom education. Reading the Federalist Papers, understanding that, I think that's part of the, as soon as you say requisite, you can't actually say that, because there are exceptions to that rule. However, if you don't understand your free system, you cannot maintain it and cannot pass it on. Therefore, you get phase one. That is the result. So if you want to be a free people, there are certain levels of breadth and depth of understanding that we have to have in math and science, in history and art and politics. It doesn't mean you have a scapegoat like, oh, I only do violin. Read or watch the movie Princess Bride. You have all these people who are the best, literally, in the world at something. But guess who's the one person who beats them all? Wesley, because he has a scholar phase. He has a breadth of education, which enables him to master any field he touches. You have to have breadth if you're going to be free. Third challenge. Oh, and no, mission shame. That was really the point of that one. Because the third one, what I just talked about, is the challenge, is the last and final challenge. This will be the main struggle, is get an education that prepares you, that enables you to actually live and fulfill your mission. Number one, seek and discover your mission. Number two, live it. Do it. And number three, right now is your time. Right now, the next handful of years for you is your time to prepare to go out into the world and not be a dog, but be a hero. Thank you guys very much.
Latter-day Saint Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.